Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and here are some of the stories we're covering today, Thursday, August 2nd, 2018. The U.S. ambassador to South Sudan weighs in on the detention of a South Sudanese civil rights activist.
We are asking for his release and for more information about really what the case has been about. This is something that has gotten a lot of attention from the international community and the United States.
And South Sudan's full integration into the EAC is delayed.
And the integration is taking time. There's a lot of training that is to go on, sensitization of our people, institution by institution, and so on, are still going on. This is the process. So we are there, and we are carrying out meetings every time.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United States is urging the South Sudanese government to immediately release civil society activist Peter Bayar Ajok, who was arrested last week by South Sudan National Security agents. Manyang David Mayar reports for VOA from Juba.
U.S. Ambassador to South Sudan Thomas Hosek emerged from a meeting with South Sudanese Justice Minister Paulino Wanawila today to tell reporters in Juba that he made it clear to Wanawila the U.S. is deeply concerned about the arrest and detention of Peter Bayar Ajok.
We are asking for his release and for more information about really what the case has been about. This is something that has gotten a lot of attention from the international community and the United States in particular.
Bayar, a PhD student at Cambridge University in London, was arrested at Juba International Airport on Saturday. For the last 5 days, the civil society activist has been held at the South Sudan National Security Service detention facility in Juba. He has not been charged with a crime. Wanawila says his ministry has no information about Bayar's arrest.
We are still awaiting, of course, information from the arresting authority. My people might have taken note of it, but we don't have the information still. But obviously, NRS has a reason behind it. And until we find out what is the reason, we will not be able to talk about a case which we have not yet taken note of.
Peter Bayar is the founder and leader of the South Sudan Young Leaders Forum, a group which mobilizes youth in the country to move South Sudan out of conflict and onto a path of peace and development. The government has yet to issue a statement explaining why Bayar was arrested. Local activists speaking on condition of anonymity for fear of reprisal say they think Bayar was arrested because of recent remarks he made to regional and international media in which he criticized the Kiir administration. Bayar told a Nairobi-based television station, NTV, days before his arrest that South Sudan needs a generational exit of current leaders so that youth can take over the country in order to achieve total peace and development. He also told China Global Television Network, CGTN, recently that sanctions alone are not enough to prompt change in South Sudan. He called sanctions lazy tools for dealing with South Sudan's political leaders. Bayar says when Riek Machar was placed under house arrest in South Africa, it worked well because he couldn't move. He says the same sort of thing could be used against President Salva Kiir and his close advisors. In a statement issued yesterday, the South Sudan Young Leaders Forum demanded Bayar's unconditional and immediate release and to assure his safety and freedom of speech. For VOA News, I'm Manyang David Mayar in Juba.
A group of South Sudanese arrested and later released by the National Security Service have formed an association called the Organization of Former Political Detainees and Prisoners to advocate for people being held without due process. Leonzio Anek, the interim chairman of the group, who was detained for 5 months in 2015 at National Security Headquarters in Juba, says President Salva Kiir should order the immediate release of all political detainees still being held by South Sudan's national security.
I can tell you the name of these people. There is Nero Anthony, there is James Lual, there is Ladu James Paul, Ayume Peter Dada, Yahya Babu, Ahmed Abdallah, Ochaya Godfrey, Severio, Tarkizio Ochili, Peter Abderrahman Sule, I hope he's alive, General Elias Lino, Agre Idri Esbon, Samuel Lwagdang, William Henley, James Gadet, and the new ones like Peter Biar, who are just being arrested. So I really feel that we are now the same group of people. He's having the same experience we have experienced in detention.
I've spoken to people who were arrested in South Sudan and were taken into custody of the national security, and they told me about their experiences in detention. How was your experience?
I'm telling you, the rooms are like containers without windows. There is just a slit somewhere, and now your ears cannot hear properly because up to now I still have my ear is always ringing, and I had issue with my prostate gland. It was swollen up. I had problems with my heart. So many things, and people were so sick. There was no food. You could go for 3 days without eating.
What did the national security officials tell you why you were arrested? Did they give you any reason why you were picked?
After 5 months, and they told me that, okay, we want to release you, Professor. We know you are not feeling well, so for humanitarian reasons, we release you. But I said, then, I'd like you to tell me why you got me here. They said, yeah, we think you are a rebel. Yeah, you are with those of Machar, Jack Machar. Then I told them, why don't you release me? You are president, said, everybody should be released. There is an amnesty. Yeah? You don't listen to your president, they just laughed at me. Most of us, you don't know we were being followed. So basically, it was an issue of just, I don't like this guy, I don't like the way he talks, I don't like the way he walks, whatever.
You're telling me that you were just arrested because someone had personal issues with you. How possible is that?
When I was there, they told me we have 4 officers who are investigating you. Then I said, what evidence do you have? Where is my lawyer? Why don't you take me to court? You know, I'm ready to face the court because it is my right. And then if you find me guilty, you can put me in jail. They couldn't answer that. Then I told them, you're not competent then to interview me.
You are speaking at a time when it appears the government is cracking down on activists. A lot of them have been arrested in the past week. Why do you think the government is harassing activists?
The basic thing is that there is no rule of law in the country. And the National Security Service has become a law unto itself. Its basic function is actually to collect information, analyze them, and then give them to the police. And the police, if they think there is evidence, the DPP or the Director of Public Prosecution can take you to court. But these people, it could be a personal issue. It could be just, you say something they don't like. You know, they just take you. You know, so these activists, you know, by nature of their work, they will have to make a statement when women are raped, when people are shot in Juba, when people things are stolen, you know, when people are killed. They have to make a statement that this is wrong. When they are doing their own job of barely highlighting the difficulties people are undergoing, then they get arrested.
That's Leonzio Onik, interim chairman of the new group called the Organization of Former Political Detainees and Prisoners. Onik is also a former professor at the University of Juba. He was speaking from Nairobi with my colleague John Tanza earlier today. East African community leaders have delayed South Sudan's full membership into the regional bloc. A South Sudanese official says the country's ongoing conflict has made it difficult for South Sudan to meet the EAC's rules for full integration. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Juba.
South Sudan officially joined the East African community 2 years ago and is already part of the regional bloc. South Sudan has members in the East African Legislative Assembly, which is the legislative arm of the community. South Sudan also has a judge in the East African Court of Justice, which is the judicial organ of the regional bloc. but the country is yet to be fully integrated in many areas, including the custom union. Lebret Fumukeko, Secretary General of the EAC, last week said the full integration of South Sudan into the regional bloc has been delayed by what he called the prevailing turmoil in the country. The Tanzanian-based Citizen newspaper quotes Fumukeko as saying the EAC community is optimistic that the ongoing IGAD-led peace talks might bring an end to the conflict and see South Sudan settle down to business. Mou Atian, the Secretary General of South Sudan Secretariat for the East African Community, says Juba was given 3 years to fulfill the obligations for it to qualify for full integration. Atian admits 2 years down the line, South Sudan is yet to endorse the East African Community protocols as a prerequisite for full integration.
We are full members with all the rights, the privileges and obligations of a member. We are there already. So, and the integration is taking time. There's a lot of training that is to go on, sensitization of our people, institution by institution, and so on, are still going on. This is the process. So we are there, and we are carrying out meetings every time. Many members from East African community, they come here almost every week. I mean, different institutions to train, to sensitize our people. This is the process of integration, yes.
Atian says being admitted to the regional bloc means that South Sudan will enjoy all the economic benefits the bloc currently has to offer, including free movement of labor and capital and free trade. The country will also join the other member states as they move to increase economic integration through a monetary union and eventually establish a single political federation. The protocol South Sudan needs to endorse and implement in order to become fully integrated into the EAC include a customs union protocol and the common market protocol, federal union and federation protocol. Atian says South Sudan is yet to endorse any of these protocols. He says the government must first take time to study the protocols and sensitize its citizens before signing the protocols.
We gave ourselves 3 years to start implementing this. The common market, which actually means free movement of people, capital, services, and so on. We are already 2 years.
That includes goods, okay?
Yes, goods and services. Yeah. We are already, we have had now 2 years, or even more. So we are left with a few, with either a year, or even less than a year, for us to fully implement. But it does not mean that we should not start. We had already started to begin doing these things. And the full integration will take time.
Atian says the conflict in South Sudan has slowed down effort to work towards the country's full integration in the EAC.
It is one of the things that has affected us, has affected our nation, the conflict. Even in a family, if there is a quarrel, things will not move. So what do you think of a nation? How will investors come to invest in South Sudan if there is no peace? Investor must have peace, there must be stability for them to do their work. So yes, and unless there is peace, many people will always question the safety of their investments in our country. But with the peace, I tell you, wonders will happen.
Atian says at its admission into the EAC, South Sudan was given a 3-year transition period before implementing the membership instruments on customs union and common market protocol.
The onus is now on us. We should reciprocate. Now, the arrangement we have made when some members come from there is that we had the EAC Affairs office here make an effort to write to immigration to allow these people come in without fees being paid. That is laborious, it is. That should not be the case. They should be waived as equally, so that when their members come here, they find it free. That process is on. We will soon make sure that we reciprocate, so that they get it easy to come to South Sudan, as we do when we go to their countries.
Fumukeko is calling on South Sudan's leaders to move quickly and establish all the required structures in the country for it to be fully integrated in the bloc. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Health experts are speeding to the DRC to fight the latest Ebola outbreak there. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what do you want to do before you die?
I'd love to make a commemorable event for the whole country, for my country to know, as in to help like a very specific group of people who can remember at any time that I helped them once in a while.
I want to have visited every country in Africa: Nigeria, Liberia, Togo, Cote d'Ivoire, Guinea, all of them. I really want to be there.
Okay, I would want to be successful so that I pay back my parents for what they have invested in me, and of course live a good life.
Now, before I die, I want to be a women activist and the voice for the vulnerable, whether through an already established organization or a CBO, or starting up my own organization.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The World Health Organization says expert staff and equipment have been sent to Northeastern Democratic Republic of Congo to quickstart the process of combating a new outbreak of Ebola. The last outbreak of this fatal virus in Congo was declared over just a week ago. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
Ebola is a constant threat in the Democratic Republic of Congo, as the virus thrives in heavily forested areas. This latest outbreak is the 10th since the first one was discovered in 1976. The World Health Organization says this new outbreak in North Kivu province is 2,500 kilometers away from Ecuador province, the site of the previous outbreak, and there is no link between the two. WHO spokesman Tarek Jazarevich says the DRC Ministry of Health informed WHO Wednesday that 4 of 6 samples taken in North Kivu tested positive for Ebola virus. He says it is crucial to gain access to the area as quickly as possible. He says having people and material in the country from the outbreak in Ecuador is very helpful in tackling the outbreak.
So we really need to get into the area to do epidemiological investigation, try to find cases, try to work with health workers to strengthen infection prevention and control measures, and also to start with the contact tracing. It is, on the other hand, very worrying that this area is a conflict zone. It is an area with lots of displacement, so the access can be hampered in that way.
The virus was discovered in a village near the city of Beni in North Kivu, which hosts more than 1 million displaced people. The province shares borders with Rwanda and Uganda, with a lot of cross-border movement due to brisk trade. Jazarevich says WHO will work with these neighboring countries to try to prevent the virus from crossing over. He says identifying the type of Ebola virus that is circulating is a priority, as that will tell scientists whether the vaccine used to help contain the outbreak in Ecuador province can also be used in North Kivu. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Zimbabwean human rights activists have condemned soldiers' action in post-election violence that killed at least 3 people in the capital, Harare. Opposition challenger Nelson Chamisa claimed victory in Monday's election, and yesterday hundreds of angry opposition supporters protested outside the election commission. Demonstrators threw rocks as police fired back with tear gas and water cannons. Later, army vehicles rolled through the streets and soldiers were seen shooting at pedestrians. Correspondent Anita Powell, who's been in Harare covering developments, tells VOA's Kim Lewis about the mood in the city today.
So in central Harare this morning, it was like a ghost town. Central Harare is usually a hive of activity and just snarling traffic and exhaust and activity. And this morning, it was dead quiet. In front of opposition headquarters in downtown, there were army and police trucks parked. We heard that the soldiers were telling shopkeepers to close up and go home early. So that's the situation in central Harare. Last night, we learned that the government had invoked what is called the Public Order and Security Act. It's a rather controversial act that allows the police to call in the military to assist to keep order. So that's where we are in terms of the security situation in Harare this morning. There's a heavy police presence, and there's also a military presence on the street, which of course is unsettling and upsetting to many people who live in Harare.
Also, Anita, now human rights organizations are calling for an investigation into the killing yesterday of three protesters there in Harare.
This morning, I spoke to several human rights activists, prominent Zimbabwean human rights activists, who condemned the soldiers' actions yesterday, in which we now know that at least three people were shot dead. They condemned their actions as outrageous and unjustifiable. They said that the police had the situation in hand when some 150 protesters came to election headquarters to protest, and they did not see why the military needed to be called in, that it was on the shoulders of the government of Zimbabwe to restore order in a more responsible way, and they called for an investigation. Also this morning, President Emmerson Mnangagwa issued a series of tweets in which he sounded a little bit more conciliatory than he had last night. Last night, he blamed the violence on his opponent, presidential candidate Nelson Chamisa. As you recall, Chamisa claims that he won Monday's poll, although the big issue is that presidential results are not out yet, 3 days after the poll. This morning, Mnangagwa says we've been in communication with Chamisa to discuss how to defeat the situation. It's important that we are united. And he also is calling for an independent investigation into what happened in Harare. He's trying, I guess, to put out a message of authority and calm.
What is the expectation today regarding the Electoral Commission releasing the results of the presidential poll?
We just heard from the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission around noon that they would tell us at 5 when they would release the presidential results. The upshot of that is we don't know when we might get the presidential results. We might get them this evening. We might get them tomorrow. The Election Commission spokesman who spoke, he said that, you know, legally, the commission has 5 days to release results, as this maybe indicates that they might go on the long side. They might take up to 5 days. Their deadline for that is August 4th. So we may not know tonight. We may not know tomorrow.
Have there been any new developments regarding Chamisa's claims that he won the election?
I spoke to Chamisa's spokesman last night, and he's taken to calling him President Chamisa. They believe very firmly that they won the vote. They believe that their observers at polling stations around the country documented what is a clear victory for the MDC alliance. So he's standing firm in his assertions that he won the poll. What's also interesting is the MDC has called into question counting processes. For example, there were results that came in from rural areas before results came in from central Harare, which is a heavily urbanized area. They're asking why? Why would the countryside be reporting sooner than the city? So those are some interesting questions that they're asking. A lot of the delay and a lot of the controversy centers around what I believe is called the Z11 form. It's a form posted outside of individual polling stations that has to be signed off on by all local election observers. And so the Election Commission is saying that they just haven't collated all of those forms because they cannot consider results legitimate and completed until all of the party observers sign off. And what they're saying is that not everybody has signed off. There's almost certainly an interesting and complicated backstory there, and maybe we'll find out in coming days.
That's VOA's correspondent Anita Powell speaking with my colleague King Lewis from Harare earlier today. Three Russian journalists have been killed in the Central African Republic. They were investigating Russian government interests in diamond, gold, and uranium mining and the involvement of Kremlin-linked mercenaries from a consultancy called the Wagner Group. The firm has been active in Syria, eastern Ukraine, and Sudan. In the Central African Republic, the group has been training local forces. An editor with the journalist's employer, the Russia-based Investigations Management Center, says the three men were on their way at night to Bambari, about 400 kilometers from the capital, Bangui. A road blocked by security forces warned against traveling to the rebel-controlled north, but the men decided to go ahead anyway. Their driver says armed men later emerged from the bush and opened fire. Finally, the 16th edition of Basketball Without Borders Africa is taking place in Johannesburg, South Africa. The four-day camp features some of Africa's most talented young players. It's sponsored by the NBA, the National Basketball Association, and FIBA, the International Basketball Federation. South Sudan-born NBA star Luol Deng is teaching at the camp and will take part in Saturday's NBA Africa game in Pretoria, South Africa. In an interview with VOA's Sonny Young, Deng praised Amadou Gallo Fall, the NBA's vice president, for his role in building Basketball Without Borders.
I've seen the growth of it. That scene when it's just the kids and a few coaches. And now seeing it now being covered globally and the attention that it's getting, it's really been amazing. And that's credit to Amadou and the work that he's put in. I think Africa is starting to appreciate him. The world is starting to appreciate him. But later on, we'll realize when Africa gets more players in the NBA like they're doing now, people will realize the work that he's doing, and obviously the NBA for backing him up.
Amadou has specifically mentioned you as one of the guiding lights, inspirations for a new generation of African players. Do you see yourself in that?
No, definitely. I think for me, when I came in the league, I've always been bothered by almost every African player was labeled. Most of them were big guys. There was always this sense of label that, you know, African players are raw and just athletic. And I wanted to change that mindset and be a skilled player that can do a lot of different things, and for people to realize that African players can be any position. You know, I'm proud of that. I'm just glad I had the opportunity to be a part of this whole thing and to be a part of the NBA for so many years.
Masai Ujiri told me earlier that facilities is one of the main things that need to be improved for the development of African basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Your thoughts?
No, I definitely agree. I think I'll give you an example. You could talk, you know, the talent is there, so you know that you can produce the players. It's almost like me telling you somewhere in Africa there's, you know, a land full of gold underneath the ground. Well, you're not going to get that gold unless you do the work to drill it and get it. And that's the example of African players. The talent is there over the all over the continent. It's just about putting in, you know, circumstances and situation where kids can actually be at their best, where they can be trained well. So it also about coaching, teaching the coaches how to coach these players. But infrastructure is very important. The little things that, you know, we get up every day and not think about, most of the kids here and the kids all over the continent struggle with, just the little things, you know, just even if it's as small as the right shoes to play in, and just traveling to get to a court nearby, which taking hours, and it's just, you know, there's a lot of things.
That is South Sudan-born basketball star Luol Deng of the Los Angeles Lakers speaking with VOA's Sunny Young in Johannesburg, South Africa. And that's our show for this Thursday. We leave you with the song Public Enemy by Ross Corby.
Yet last year the King of Israel seen was I chose. Anytime righteousness and consciousness come forward, the people always want to kill it down scene. Bless the Most High, original rascal with life and direct, so Sudan is liberated. Yeah, watch it.
They call me a public enemy because I'm fighting my enemy. Public enemy because I'm fighting my enemy.
Say, I'm not a Lebanese, a Japanese, a Chinese. I'm proud to be a Southern Sudanese.
They call me a public enemy because I'm fighting my enemy. Public enemy because I'm fighting my enemy.
See, anytime I want to talk about my people's rights,
they call me a warrior.
Anytime I want to talk about equal rights and justice,
they call me a criminal.
Don't forget about the facts and the present before you make your judgment.
Don't forget about the past and the present before you make your judgment.
We've been listening to the amazing Ross Corby with the song Public Enemy. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Thanks for being here. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
I heard about reparations.